my calculations are correct, when this baby hits 88 miles per hour, you're gonna see some serious shit.
Do you really think you have a chance against us, Mr. Cowboy?
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
It's showtime.
Right, welcome everybody to another episode of the VHS Strikes Back. I am one of your hosts, Chris, and my co-host, and maybe not for much longer, is Mr. Dave. Hello there, Dave.
Hello, my very good friend. And hello to our listeners out there. Welcome to the VHS Strikes Back, the show where we dust off the old video player and go on a nostalgic journey to look at the good and the fucking horrendous movies of yesteryear. Now, Chris, what are we going to review this week?
Well, Dave, it is my second pick of 2023. And, you know, I've been looking back recently, some of the ones I've picked, and there's not been too much controversy. There's not been, you know, there's been some great movies like Jaws and that. Like, remember Rocky V? You know, these things there, Dave, that, you know, set us up nicely towards the back end of last year. You know what? I talked myself out of it. I was going to pick another absolute classic movie, you know what I'm talking about. And I decided at the last minute to go with the 1998 martial arts expert, the greatest martial arts, Dave, of the 90s and 80s, Mr. Lauren Avadon. And this one is called Deadly Ransom. And it is fully available on YouTube at one speed, 1.25, 1.5, and 2 speed to anybody out there. It runs an hour and 37. He's a psychic Navy SEAL, Dave, and what a movie. Now, Dave, have you even heard of this thing before I threw it out there?
I have not ever heard of this one. And obviously, it's getting towards 2000, isn't it, at this point? So 1998. Wasn't it Nick Fury, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. that came out? Was it 98 or 96? 98. Yeah, 98. Yeah. That is a great movie, Chris. Fucking Hasselhoff's Nick Fury, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. You lambasted me for making you watch that one. And fuck me, that is a great, great movie in comparison to this one. But yeah, I mean, 98, let me think. I'm sort of starting to think about entering the workforce, and so my video watching time starts to diminish a little bit through the 2000s. But yeah, by this point in my life, I wasn't really watching, you know, these straight to video martial arts movies. I'm not even sure if it was distributed over here, to be honest, Chris. Did it get a UK release? I never heard of it at all. What I do know is in 1996. I mentioned this before, that's when I started working at Blockbusters, and I remember Mel Gibson's Ransom coming out, because there was a whole part of the wall dedicated to that, and so everyone, you know, no matter how many copies we had in, everyone was coming in, and, you know, they used to hang around because you'd have a Dropbox outside, or people are walking in and handing movies back all the time, and it was only an overnight one, wasn't it? So people would be hanging around like, is that Ransom? You know, almost hounding and harassing people as they're coming in to return videos. So, yeah, I remember that one. And this is kind of like, that film must have influenced this one, I think. You know, this is a couple of years later, and it's just like, let's take all these different plot points and sort of throw it at the wall and do something, you know, as an excuse to get some martial arts in a flick as well. You know, and I'm okay with that. I'm okay with, you know, it's like watching a porno movie and you know, moaning about the plot. you're not watching it for the plot. But yeah, this one's something else, this one. I mean, how about yourself, Chris?
Never, ever heard of it, Dave. But it was on the radar when I did Manhattan Chase. And I thought, it's Lauren. It's the legend. You know, my absolute man crush, Dave. I've got to throw one out there. I've got to bring the podcast back down, give it its earth rod again, give it, you know, the meat and bones of what this podcast was never supposed to be built on, but basically me trying to shaft you, Dave, but sometimes inadvertently shafting myself when we watch these movies. But look, the premise of it, like I say, when we did Manhattan Chase, it was a very close second, this, and I've had it in my head as soon as I've read the dialogue of a Navy SEAL with psychic powers. I was like, this is glorious. Dave is going to fucking hate me even more at this point when he's having to sit there watching it and he's like, Chris is a fucking Bella, knowing exactly what I was going to pick, which I probably will pick for my next one. It's just ridiculous, Dave. And I think Lauren Avadon has done some movies and I follow him on social media. We both do. We both sort of interacted with him on Instagram and that. My God. He has literally had a career of just phoning shit in, Dave. And this isn't, he's not just phoning this one in. He is literally in a call center on every phone line with this one. Absolutely classic. And I honestly, I get so much enjoyment knowing that you've had to sit there and watch this, Dave.
Well, he was the co-producer, wasn't he? So, you know, he's funded this, or at least part funded it himself.
Oh, my God.
So, I mean, if he's I don't know if it's a case of him phoning it in, but since the heady days of No Treat, No Surrender 2 and 3, you know, this is a severe drop-off. And I don't normally like to show my hands this early, but Christ almighty, I think anyone who's watched even the trailer for this one knows kind of where it's going to go, I think.
So with that, Dave, for that bombshell, shall we get into the trailer?
Let's go.
There's been a recent series of abductions of wealthy businessmen in Rio de Janeiro over the past 8 months. The deal is hostage for ransom.
Let's start with, say, $50 million.
$50 million, he's crazy.
That's why you're here, Max. Max, Jackie and her father are being held for ransom. This is the first time an American's been abducted.
This video is your first introduction into the new game, Your Money or Your Life.
So until the payment is made, Jackie and Mr. Marlin will be kept alive.
What's the time frame?
10 days.
$5,000,000. 生命保障0%。 最悪の犯罪軍団 グレイウルブス。
Anyhow, there's this undercover America guy coming down here to rescue the fair damsel in distress. Lila said he's one of those commando types. Killer trained by Uncle Sam.
Girl! The American girl and her father, where are they?
Rico. He has them.
Who's Rico?
Actually, I'm just a dope addict who loves other people's money.
FBI を手玉に取る最強武装ジャッキ
ー。 What do you think we are? Chopped liver.
I'm going after these guys with a vengeance. Anybody who gets in my way, I'm going to rip their head off. Nothing is going to stop me from rescuing Jackie and her father. You got it?
奴らは海からやってくる。捕らわれた愛する人を救うため、男たちが挑む決死の奇襲作戦。海軍特殊部隊 C、そして CIA の怒りが炸裂する。
I wouldn't worry about him. It's your fate to die.
Face Off, Jackal などに続き、今話題の超肉弾軍事アクション最新作、ついに登場。Deadly Cougar.
Lauren Avadon. In fact, you know what, Chris? I'm going to go full on trailer guy for this. Lauren Avadon is Max Leitner, a kick-ass Navy SEAL who also happens to be psychic. Max's girlfriend and father, a wealthy banker, are kidnapped by a gang of thugs, and Max will embark on a rescue mission to save them. Now, Chris, what do you reckon to the opening of this movie?
Well, can I just, I know he's going against, that was very good, by the way, very good. But, you know, I've got to read this review on IMDb, Dave. It's fucking brilliant. I've been tickling myself listening to it. So listen to this one. It says, do yourself a favor and don't rent this one. This is the title. So, not so much for the do yourself a favor, don't rent this one. Not so much for the $5 you'll be wasting, but for the 84 minutes of your life that you never get back. This movie is so horrendous that it will leave you in a state of shock and at the crap you have just witnessed. This is one of those movies that makes you wish IMDb had negatives in their rating system. I, for one, will be emailing Avadon and asking for my $5 back and to do me and everyone else a favor, not make any more movies. he makes Oliver Gruner look like an Oscar contender. Dave, that is fucking brilliant. And the guy's name's actually Lauren Avadon, which is even more worrying. He's 1 out of 10. July 7, 2000. Fucking brilliant. He's even reviewing his own fucking movies negatively. That is... Oh,
now, you did mention he's very active on social media. I don't think anyone, strangely, Chris, has reviewed this before. So it's not out of the realms of possibility that he might listen to this. But so what I'd say is it's all said with love, but it is shit.
Anyway, I have thoughts, Dave. I have thoughts. So we start off and we're getting a very... very similar, like, start to a lot of Navidon movies. You know, in this one, he is a Navy SEAL, looks in good shape. He's with his team. Shocking, like, I've got to say, the dialogue, fucking hell, is terrible. So they come, like, off. It's not exactly what they call it. What's the one with Saving Private Ryan? It's not like Saving Private Ryan when they're in Normandy and that, but they get off this fucking speedboat and they're all there, fully, like, you've got the wife beater vest tops on, showing the guns off. You know, they're pointing the guns wrong. One of the guys as part of the team, when they moor up on the fucking the beach, they're all like, you know, looking at sentry. One of them starts pointing at the sea and starts like looking and scouring the water that they've just come out of. So I'm like, why would you do that? And then they sort of meander onto the beachfront and they end up in this camp and they're doing it all quietly because they're rescuing this guy. What I was crying at, Dave, and it fucking had me. There's about five in Avedon's team. He's the leader, Max. Max Lightner's a great name. It's a proper cartoon name for the 80s.
It's like the fucking. It's like when Homer Simpson gave himself the name Max Power.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. He's the one. The guy off Mask was called something like Max something, wasn't he? But it's very similar. And anyway, they're all there as a team. And they're going through this camp and this guy's just getting electrocuted and he actually should be fucking fried like an egg, the amount of fucking electrocution he's getting. He's fucking shaking like fuck. He's either that or he's pulling one off, Dave. He's absolutely just going for it.
The old electrodes to the pods, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah. He's getting fucking electrocuted. But they kill, Avedon's team kill two guys, right? And they're already dead. They've both been like garroted with fucking wire. One gets stabbed in the neck and then Avedon's there. With like a cigar, like he's, and he goes, you guys got a light? It's like, yeah. They're dead. They're on the floor dead. What the hell are you doing? Honestly, I swear to God, this has got some of the fucking most ridiculous bits in it I've ever seen. It was unbelievable.
Well, what I can say, Chris, so the script credits have gone down to both Lauren Avedon and a chap called Robert Hyatt. And if you go to Robert Hyatt's IMDb page, his top known for film is Deadly Ransom. The other one, also Alien Seed. He was credited as the writer for that in 1989. IMDb rating of 2.5, Chris. Which you will struggle to get. I was saying 3.5 for this one is pretty low. It's rare to get that. Eat My Fucking Dust was something like 5.6. So to get 3.5 or 2.5, that's pretty fucking terrible. So, yeah, I think some of the hammy dialogue, I think mostly you've got to look at Lauren for that. You know, he's the one with the story, so him and Robert. But yeah, it is pretty awful. And the thing is, this guy who's getting rescued, you know, we see the Navy SEALs in action. And I think, you know, some of the supporting actors there are beefed up, aren't they? But it just sort of makes Lauren look a bit skinnier.
Yes. Yes.
He's never had big arms. He's never had the big, you know, steroid-infused Jean-Claude Van Damme arms, has he? So it's like, just put a shirt on, mate. That'd make it look better, you know, because surround yourself with other supporting actors who've got big guns, you know what I mean? But the guy that's getting electrocuted, you know, and really tortured, when he gets rescued, he's just like, he seems to almost be one of the team then. he seems completely cool with it. He's not like traumatized or anything. He's just like, oh, how are we going to get out of here? It's just, oh, fucking hell. And it's at that moment when I'm like, oh, fuck me, this is going to be a long ride.
Yeah, because the guy, when they rescue him, Lauren Avedon's there, he's like, he's fucking pillion. And he's like, right, you go now. The guy runs out, gets shot in the leg straight away. As soon as he fucking, like, you know, you get out of here, I'll cover you. Comes back, and Lauren goes, he goes, tourniquet your leg. And he goes, are you okay? He goes, it burns a bit, but I'll survive. He's like, oh, you're a fucking surgeon now.
He's like fucking, he's like Chuck Norris, isn't he?
Yeah.
Again, I don't think he's explained. I don't know who that guy was they were rescuing at the start, but fucking hell.
Here we go. And then when they do get away, what's funny is they go outside and they're like, one of the team stays back. He gets in the car. There's a couple of, like, I mean, they're just shooting. Got like fucking stormtrooper levels of shooting accuracy, aren't they? And they're just like firing wanton bullets at each other. But one of the guys decides to like go through in the car, and he's sat in the back, shoots the guy in the head. It's ridiculous. Then he blows up the radio, which he's playing some sort of like Waltzing Matilda type song or something. And when he comes out, he pulls up in like a fucking Jeep, and he's like, pickup truck's like, hey, do you want a lift? Yeah. And then this fucking thing turns up, and I'm like, what is this supposed to be? I've never seen a tank like it. I mean, we're talking, I've just watched Halloween Ends actually yesterday, Dave. You know, I don't like horror movies, fucking. I avoid at all costs. Jesus Christ. I don't know if you've seen it, Dave, but fucking hell, that is a bad fucking end to the Halloween saga.
I saw a lot of negative kind of reviews around it and tweets and stuff, but actually John Hammond, I said I'm reading the Hellbound Heart, which is the original book, or on novella if you like, by Clive Barker that created Hellraiser. And I forgot that they've only just released fairly recently, in this last year I think, the remake of Hellraiser, so might actually watch that. Not for this, obviously, it's too recent, but I'm quite interested just to see how that compares to the original.
Well, it's funny, you know, Dave, because and I'd be interested as well, because I didn't expect what Hellraiser was when we did it, as I've said loads of times.
Yeah.
Like the scariest VHS cover, I wouldn't even pick it up when I went in the video shop. So, but this, I watched the Halloween one from 2018 when we had our Odeon passes, and we went to watch, we should go everything, and Sam's like, you've got to come watch these horror films with me. And we went and watched it, and I actually quite enjoyed it. I mean, it's ridiculous that he walks at like 1 mile an hour and he still catches everyone who's fucking legging, which is a little bit of a reference I want to make in a second about this movie. But then it seemed to end really well, and it's like, there's no way he can survive. But he does. And yeah, anyway, this Halloween Ends, it's an hour and 40. It takes an hour before we get anywhere with it, Dave. And then it's a bit of a payoff, but it's just ridiculous. It's just, there's nothing for me. But what I was getting at, Chris Phelps' fucking segue, as always, Dave, is the tank is going about 2 miles an hour, and they're steaming off in a fucking Jeep thing, pickup truck stuff. And then it fires a bomb at the fucking pickup truck. They're all in the Avedon, this guy with the fucking peg leg who they've saved. And one of the guys gets out with a bazooka, doesn't even blow up the tank. And the next minute, he just cuts to him fucking, like, rescued him, and they're all fucking back home sort of thing. It was
it was a mastery of editing, wasn't it?
I'm telling you, because you see the tank fire back at them, but you don't see the guy who was stood behind the fucking pickup truck with the bazooka. He's disappeared, and there's no explanation whether the tank's been blown up. And then what makes me laugh, Dave, I've got to give fucking Avedon credit, he ends up getting debriefed, and he goes back into it. I mean, he's supposed to be a Navy SEAL. He looks like he's got a private detective fucking office. He walks in with his missus, and she's like, you know, I'll see you later, and she's fucking fucks off to Brazil with her dad. And he goes in his office. It just looks like something you would see on a private detective like movie.
Yeah.
And then it's like he gets a phone call, debrief, and his fucking dad is the fucking major or the colonel, and he's debriefing him. He's like, yeah, he goes, and then he finds out about his fucking missus, doesn't he? Because he's had a dream. This is where the psychic phenomenon thing comes in. He has a dream that she's been kidnapped in Brazil, because we've just seen that she has. And his dad goes, yeah, your mother always said you had sixth sense. She always said that was special power. And I'm just like, how? What? There's no explanation how he has these dreams. And it's It's fucking terrible, Dave, I've got to say.
Well, Chris, I mean, I was giving the editor a bit of a hard time there because I'm thinking, well, you know, he's obviously chopped something out to not help the continuity. But I suspect it was just never shot. So the editor can only work with the footage that they have. And the reason I say that, the editor is a chap called Rick Fields. Great name again.
Yeah.
Rick Fields was involved in the editorial department for The Warriors.
Oh, cool.
Also for Poltergeist. And he was part of the crew of Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Now talk about a fall from grace, Chris.
Dave, you've got to take whatever the cash is.
Fuck me. I mean, you know, you got some big hitters there. And so, I just... I want to know more about Rick Fields, really, because it's just, you know, whether he's fallen on hard times and just trying to get the only bit of work that he can. But yeah, 20 years after, I mean, Close Encounters of the Third Kind was 1977. So to be doing this more than 20 years after, you know, you generally go up in your career, don't you?
Not necessarily, David. But I think what's silly is Max is like to his dad's going, I know, Max, you know, there's no point in me court-martialing you, putting in prison because you're just going to escape. So he's like, but this goes undercover. And we get this whole dialogue where Max is traveling and he goes, you're going to go as a civilian on a you know, the domestic flight and you're going to book 30 days emergency leaving and I'm going to get the CIA involved. And he talks about like this guy you're going to see when you get there, you know, and he's a, you're a member of the press, he's a member of the press as well. But, and then it's like, he gets to Brazil and then the guy goes, they've got your girl, but they've gone to Venezuela. Like, I've got another plane ready. I'm thinking, Avid almost have the worst fucking jet lag you've ever seen. He's just dead cool. No, not messing around. They get to Venezuela and then the guy says, like, he goes, we're not going to a hotel. That was a ruse. And he goes, we're going to camp out, aren't we? Yeah. And you get like this.
A ruse for who?
Exactly. It's nobody. And what happens is, though, they set up this camp in the middle of like the jungle in Nicaragua, Venezuela, sorry, wherever they're supposed to, Venezuela. And you've got the baddies, which Brian James, you know, fall from grace as the fucking the Sandman from 48 Hours. He's got a cane. He's this banker and he's fucking got, you know, he's absolutely hamming this up, Dave. Like, ridiculous. He's got his henchman Bruno, who's got one white fucking contact lenses, so he looks like he's a hard man. You know, is that a throwback, Dave, to Franco in No Friend of Free? I don't know.
I think it's just a good kind of trope, isn't it, for an action movie. You know, to have something visually distinctive about this bloke. Otherwise, you know, he can just blend into the background with the other fodder. So just giving himself a one different coloured eye there. I think we've seen that in other things. It almost has a bit of a James Bond feel to it.
Yeah, it does, to be fair. And Luis Mendez is his pal, who's like Luis, who he meets and everything. But what's really daft is, I knew straight away, his missus there, his girlfriend, Jackie, her dad, straight away I was like, oh, this looks conspicuous. He's even dressed like a baddie. He's the banker of like the biggest bank. Rico is Brian James. Bobby Rico is his right-hand man who basically ran off with the money 14 years earlier. We then find out that he's Lauren Avedon's fucking uncle, Max's uncle, on his mother's side. It's his mum's brother, right? So, like, what of all the coincidences in the movie? But when he gets this Louise as him, he's like, he goes, so really, you're just like a babysitter? He goes, no. He goes, you've got to follow me, haven't you? And he's like, yeah. He goes, well, I've read your file. You're a martial arts expert, weapons expert. They go to this bit where the camp is, where they think like his missus is. Fucking Lewis gets absolutely hammered. He shows no martial arts skills, gets beat up. They're throwing knives and that. But what gets me is, Dave, like they're supposed to be inconspicuous and everything, right? Avedon's camp, they get a motorbike. How loud's a motorbike? They've got electricity running because he's watching videos. In the middle of the fucking jungle, there's all these things that have no explanation. But Avedon's delivery, Dave, of like when he's being the tough guy and everything, it never sits with me at all. Never.
No.
It's ridiculous. I mean, his kicks in that are brilliant. His martial arts stuff's great, yeah, without a doubt. But everything else just falls apart for me.
Yeah. And that's it, isn't it? I think there were a few, like a smattering, a little sprinkle, Chris, of decent kind of kicks. I'm not even going to say good fight scenes, because it wouldn't stretch out for a whole fight scene, but just the odd kick here and there, you know, in your combats, you know, in the middle of the fucking jungle or something. It's not the most practical. So that's what is the best thing about Avedon, isn't it? But, you know, highly impractical, but that doesn't matter. But yeah, he just doesn't really pull off the tough guy, so to speak. It's just, but you know, I don't know what else to say. The one thing I was going to say is, so I think it fails as a martial arts action movie. But the thing you were saying about Avedon phoning it in, I just wonder, you know, with him being the co-producer and the co-writing credit that he got with Robert Hyatt. So Robert Hyatt's the director. So between the two of them, they've figured out what this story is. They've written all the scenes and all the dialogue and everything. And I just think it's too much. If you think about it, you know, to do all that, to be the producer, to make sure you've got the investment, you know, to make sure you're writing the lines, and then to choreograph the fight scenes and everything, and then deliver it, and then, you know, shoot it as many times as it takes to get it right. You know, that's one of the things with the Hong Kong movies. You know, the fight scenes are so fucking good because they've probably been shooting it for a fucking month to get the, you know, looking absolutely perfect. So I just think a lot of this looks really labored, and you know, I think it's through Avedon just trying to spread himself too thin, because I don't think at this point in his career, he was scratching around for stuff to do. It was after, you know, all the run-ins with co-stars and whatever. So I don't think people were knocking down his door to, you know, join their project.
No, and I think you're right, because you can see with Avedon, when we've done these movies, like Manhattan Chase is around this time, isn't it? 2000, I think, wasn't it, Manhattan Chase?
Yeah.
You can clearly see where his career goes, can't you, with these movies? You can clearly see it. Like, it's just so low budget. And like Brian James, you know, he's not an absolute legend, but he's always a baddie, isn't he? He's always like...
quite consistent as well, isn't he? I mean, even in this, it's Brian James, and you know straight away, even though he's his uncle, you know he's going to be a baddie because it's Brian James. And I feel like he's the only one who really gives that consistent performance.
Yeah, I do. And he over-eggs it, because you've got like the situation with the son and with the daughter, and she sort of realizes there's something not right about her dad. And then the next minute, like, she's... He from nowhere, he just becomes like part of the baddies then, don't he? They want 50 million, which, to be fair, for a movie from 1998 is a hell of a fucking ransom demand, Dave. It's not exactly $1 million. You know?
Yeah.
50 million is a lot to ask for anything. So, yeah, I sort of went with I go with it because we've got no fucking choice, let's be honest. But I think like the premise of it all, like, you know, Louise has been told not to open his mouth and say anything, but he says, I've spoke to my supervisor, spoke to your dad. And he's like, oh, don't tell me. He's put a kibosh on it. You know, it's the end of the thing. And he's like, no, he's actually said it's an unlimited fucking budget, so he can do whatever he wants. And so the best bit of the movie is, and I know you'd seen this before me and you put me onto this, is the fucking prostitute. So there's a prostitute who apparently Louise rescued, and her whole family absolutely love Louise because of what he did. He's such a great guy and all this shit. And he's there like, she absolutely loves me, this woman. And he's talking about it. And he says, well, we need to get a tracking device in a stiletto. So for some reason, instead of just going to a house and maybe Louise having a coffee with her and that, no, he breaks into her house, gets under her bed as she's fucking servicing one of her clients, which does look like some have a fucking Carry On movie. It's ridiculous.
I mean, I don't even know what they're trying to do, but It's obviously, even these action films, right? They're at least an R rating, aren't they? Yeah. Some of them, you know, will be a lot of them will be 18s just because of the violence and stuff, or you know, X rated in the US. So you're targeting people who've probably had sex, Chris. And this resembles nothing like that. It is like a comedy. You could put the Benny Hill music on it, you know, where they're just jumping around on the bed going, ah.
Yeah. You know?
and he's like under the bed, proper Carry On style. It's just like, right, what was it? Whatever it was. 46 minutes, go to there and have a look at this.
Yeah, it's fucking brilliant. It's just, it's so nonsensical. Like, it makes no, and there's no need for it in the movie because the next minute, the woman's there and I don't know why Avedon's like, we need to, you know, we can't tell her what we're doing. She needs to not know. Let's put the tracking device in because she's going to go and have sex with Rico. And then she's like, I don't even like Rico. He hurts me. Takes her top down and shows us a fucking nipple, Dave. Not straight away. Like, look, have a look at this here. It's just like, and then she's so fucking on fire for fucking Luis. He's like, wear red for me because he wants, obviously, because of the stiletto and that. And she's like, oh, yeah, you've got a thing for me, aren't you, you freak? Just like, who the fuck wrote this shit? Who the fuck? Well, yeah, obviously. I mean, we know what happened in King of the Kickboxers with that rather attractive lady from No Shit Surrender 3, don't we? They didn't exactly get on. But, yeah, Dave, I watched this thinking, oh, my God, how have these things ever, how have they ever come to production, really? Let's be honest. It's and I'm not just being a dick. I genuinely struggle when you watch this. You're like, how the hell has he even got this released, like Avedon?
By paying for it. I mean, again, I guess he's probably just behind the curve, I think, because the straight-to-video action B-movies were kind of dying a death about this time. And I think he's probably just been slow to recognize that and just thinking that still, well, like I say, it's like putting porn together or something. You know, you can come up with any old shit. Let's just Ransom with Mel Gibson. That was popular, wasn't it? Let's put someone up for ransom. Let's kidnap someone, but we'll have a bit of a switcheroo at the end. Navy SEAL stuff, Under Siege, you know, whatever that came out. That was popular as well. Let's have some Navy SEALs in there. Fucking psychics. Well, they're good, aren't they? They can get us through some lazy writing conundrums, because I found the whole psychic thing just very inconsistent. Like you say, yeah, flying off here, there, and everywhere, doesn't realize his uncle is the traitor and whatever, but just like in the middle of a fight scene or something, he just, you know, will predict something. I found the whole psychic thing very unexplained and just convenient lazy writing. It didn't really make for a really good interesting plot point, did it? You know, no. And I just think it's just fucking horrendous. But I have to say, Chris, not that I'm trying to push you in this direction for the future, because I think we need to put this one to bed for a little bit. But I was actually just scrolling through on some of the Avedon stuff, and it drops off. I think the last thing he did, he's actually got a podcast credit for 2020. Before that, though, some Risk Factor in 2015. Before that, he plays an uncredited Russian guard in Chuck, the TV series. He plays a camp guard, also uncredited, in 24 in 2007. So, I mean, he was really struggling for the work, I think, around this time. Now, he'd maybe made enough money. I thought he was still working as like a stunt coordinator, but I'm not seeing a lot of things that he's done there. But there is one in 2000, Chris, called Tiger Claws 3 with Lauren Avedon and Cynthia Rothrock. And here's the synopsis. So when a martial artist called Striker resurrects three ancient Chinese master assassins so he can take over New York's underworld, it's up to martial artist cop Terek Richards to stop them, but he will need the aid of Stryker's former master. Actually, you know what? I'm kind of in for this one. It certainly sounds a bit better than this shit. But I'll be intrigued whether that one is better. I mean, certainly a better name, isn't it? Tiger Claws 3. That gives you the sense that, you know, that we're in for some good fucking martial arts here.
I've got to give you credit, Dave. It's your enthusiasm. I've absolutely nailed you to the cross with this one, and you're still fucking willing to go down this rabbit hole with Mr. Avedon again. I think what it is with Avedon is he's got a look about him, hasn't he, right? So I get it why he's not ugly or anything, is he? He's a good-looking guy.
Yeah.
I get it why he was picked and his athleticism. And when you read the story about No Surrender 2, you know, how it all come to pass. Van Damme bottled it with Kurt McKinney, didn't he? He was sort of like, we're going to get fucking attacked, basically sexually attacked when we go over to film over there, Cambodia, wherever it was. And he took Kurt out of it. So Van Damme was out of the question for the sequel. Have you got any athletic guys, does martial arts, Lauren Avedon? You know, and he is, to be fair, he was a national champion at Taekwondo and stuff like that. So shit, he is. Good, and he has no acting skills. It's pretty obvious there. That's not being disrespectful to him, but he's literally, movie by movie, he's trying to become better. And you can see these bits there where he's done some sort of acting workshop and he's tried to bring it in. You know, some of the things you've seen, like when he's trying to be like dead serious and cry and things like that, they all look so awkward, don't they? And just so, they just never look like right with him. And I think he's at his best when he's doing something like this because there's no real need for him to give us any sort of dialogue at all. It's just, it doesn't matter. You get in a Lauren Avedon film, you get what you pay for, and it's usually pretty fucking terrible acting, but really good martial arts. In this, I don't honestly think we even get that. I'll be honest, I don't. I think it's a really, really strange movie, and it's, like you said, it's not even a director with DVD, Dave. It's not even worth it. I've been put on a DVD. It's like some fucking university project and they threw a movie together at times because the editing is terrible. I mean, King of the Kickboxers 2, which I know we haven't covered properly and we've both watched it, is fucking terrible. The editing in that makes no sense. This isn't as bad, but there's not a lot of point to what's going on and it gets revealed that the dad is in on it. What a surprise. You know, like Bruno, then that's what that is about the... I know I'm waffling, but you're talking about the psychic powers. Bruno has a absolute dead-eye sniper shot on fucking Max's head, and he just stares down the fucking sniper barrel, doesn't he, from about 100 yards away, and then some guy comes, and he attacks him, and then Bruno legs it, and I'm like, I don't understand, why would he leg it? There's some unbelievable things go on in this that there is no explanation to me why they even happened there. I can't even defend Avedon with this one because I honestly don't know what the fuck's going on at times.
You know what I feel like this film could have actually been? I mean, because we don't know that much about it, there's very little on the internet about it as well. It feels to me more than a straight to video B movie. It feels to me like it could be an attempt at like pitching a series. You know, like an ongoing series or something. Yeah. So, you know, like a Knight Rider pilot or a Street Hawk pilot or something like that. You know, because they did the whole psychic thing, like I say, it didn't really have a massive influence, you know, apart from just dodging a bullet, you know, foreseeing that this bullet was coming from him and whatever. And I think it might be that whole kind of private eye style office, just the way it was shot and everything. It just made me think, is he thinking this could be, you know, weekly adventures of Max Leitner as he solves crimes, as he comes out of being a Navy SEAL to becoming a private eye or something like that. I'm glad you'd mentioned about that because more towards the end of the movie, I'm thinking, I do wonder if this was more supposed to be like a TV pilot kind of thing, straight to TV, and then kick off a series from there.
Yeah, I mean, the name is a comic book name, isn't it? really. Max Lightner's a fucking brilliant name. What a name for a baddie, a goodie. You know, like, it really is cartoon levels. It's just a shame, really, because it was never going to fucking win any Oscar thing. But as a movie, there's just no payoff. Even at the end, you want this massive battle, and Bruno ends up fighting against Max. And, you know, Max is fucking brilliant, actually. He's got handcuffs on. So Bruno's getting the better of him and giving him a kick in, and he's had a couple of kick-ins because he gets captured just a little bit early by Bruno, doesn't he? But then what's funny is the fucking Bruno goes to get him with, like, that sword thing that he's got, and conveniently it breaks up the fucking handcuffs so he can start fighting him. And they're on this hillside fighting, and the fight is pretty weak, Dave. I think you hit the nail on the head. It's really fucking poor. Usually I can forgive all of Avedon's movies. I certainly can, but the fight's terrible. And when Bruno finally meets his demise, we see that off camera, and the next minute he's got, like, a fucking load of shitty effects. Like, he's got a spear through his stomach. It's really piss poor in stages, I must admit.
In stages?
It could be a bit of slack, you know.
Well, on that, Chris, should we get into our final review?
Yeah, I've tried my best to keep us going here, Dave. I can't. Let's go. So, Dave, magnificent pick from me, without a doubt. Absolutely. Lauren Avedon at his fucking very worst, but it's another Avedon movie. And I will put to rest Avedon, Dave, for a while now. I don't know whether we're going to do another one this year, but I've got to at least, you know, throw one in there. This is my one movie for the year for Avedon, I think. Unless you want to throw one in the mix, Dave, or one of our Patreon listeners.
Oh, yeah, that's likely, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, no one likes stitching you up. They like stitching me up, so it won't be an Avedon movie, will it? It'll be some fucking sword and sorcery bullshit sci-fi thing. I'll end up getting stiffed.
You know what? So Jack, on Back to the Filmography, obviously got up to In the Name of the King with Jason Statham and Burt Reynolds. So there was him, there was Angry Andy and Spider-Dan all on there. And especially Spider-Dan, he's usually pretty good at, like, finding an angle where, you know, you can find something interesting, and all three of them were like, this is fucking horrendous. I think I told you, even I could not make my way all the way through that movie, Chris.
It's fucking brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. I think it's one of them, and we do these movies and you just sort of like, yeah, no, yeah. You know, and this was Chris Felt's plot device to stitch you up, mate. You know it was. But I always stitch myself up. That's the problem, because it's so fucking terrible.
It's another
terrible
month till you get to write it now.
Yeah, it's so terrible. It really is. But anyway, it's not one of his best by any stretch of the imagination. It's certainly not King of the Kickboxers 2 level, or Manhattan Chase is another classic. That is just a ridiculous movie. But it's got Lauren in. I can accept it. I can go with the fact that, you know, he's in the movie. So he's going to Elm Street. He's got some of the worst fucking dialogue, action. Just nothing makes sense in the movie at all. So, Elm Street for me, Dale, I've not got a lot to say about it because it's fucking atrocious. That's exactly where I stand with that.
Well, Chris, I actually wonder, you know, is this a multi-year strategy that you're executing at the moment to make me think more fondly of No Retreat, No Surrender 3? And you know what? If that was the case, it's kind of working, because that film gets fucking better and better the more of these you choose. And, you know, obviously I don't mind. It's a bit fun in it that when you pick these, because occasionally you will strike gold, like Cage. For me, I think I'd sit down and watch Cage now again. You know, we still need to do the sequel, actually.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that will be quite as good. I'm not sure that will recreate the magic of that first one. But it is good, you know, just mix things up and throw in these things that we know are going to be pretty bad. But this one, I think this, unlike something like Cage, it doesn't have anything redeeming about it. It doesn't have any great fight scenes. I think the fight scenes are pretty labored. The script writing, the dialogue, I think is pretty poor, but I mean, you kind of go in almost expecting that. So I don't think I'm going to count that too much against it. But it was just really not a good movie where, you know, you can pull out things that are like unintentionally funny. Even the, you know, the ridiculous prostitute sex scene was, you know, that's sort of semi-funny, but, you know, just because it's ridiculous and it gives you a nanosecond like of a laugh, but then that's it. It's you know, you're thinking in this like martial arts action movie, you shouldn't be having a sketch from Carry On or Benny Hill. So, yeah, I just think there's just nothing redeemable for me. And I don't think you need to watch this one unless you are a massive completionist and you're trying to watch everything that Avedon has done. I think you can skip this one quite easily. And yeah, so I'm afraid for me, Chris, it's going to Alderaan.
I expected it. It's very rare that you actually do that, Dave. But yeah, I can't argue with that, mate. I honestly cannot argue. I can't argue with that. So, Dave, big thanks, mate, for putting up with me with this one. Now, it's your pick next week, Mr. Horrocks, and I've got to say, I am applauding you virtually at this point. So what are we going to be covering next?
Well, again, I think we have to say in this space, there seems to be more and more podcasts popping up who do like, you know, 80s and 90s retro reviews and whatever. But I can't think of anyone who will make this kind of transition from Deadly Ransom to the next movie, Chris. So we do have to remind ourselves. And, I was wobbling a bit, you know, even when we started the podcast, I thought, should I stick with this good pick? And I have had, you know, I've wobbled a bit. I've picked some other good films as well. I've taken this slot and then I've changed it. And then as we were going through this, I'm like, Tiger Claws 3. Maybe I'll go with something like that. But no, I'm going to stick with my original pick. And Chris, I'd said to you, you know, I've been late to the party, very late to the party, in fact. But, you know, with a bit more time on my hands, you know, coming into the holiday period, I decided I was going to finally start watching The Sopranos and started it. And then that was it. Everything else was off because I couldn't stop watching it. I just got to the end of the episode and then I'm trying to think, oh, right, I've got to watch this, you know, for whatever reason. But no, I don't have to do that right now. I'm going to watch the next episode and just absolutely loved it. So, you know, it's just a shame. Obviously, they did that kind of follow-up movie and whatever. But I mean, I've been in full mob mode. And obviously, Tulsa King as well coming out with Stallone. I think that's absolutely brilliant again. And it's a lot of the same language. But the thing is with this movie, this was a direct influence on The Sopranos. If you don't have this movie, I don't think you have The Sopranos at all. So, Chris, we are going back to 1990 and a movie that stars Robert De Niro, Ray Liotta, and Joe Pesci, and it is Goodfellas. Now let's get into the trailer.
As far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be a gangster.
I know I'd go from rags to riches.
To me, being a gangster was better than being president of the United States.
Never rat on your friends. And always keep your mouth shut.
It meant being somebody in the neighborhood that was full of nobodies.
Oh, you broke it, Jerry!
You look like a gangster.
By the time I grew up, there was $30 billion a year in cargo moving through Idlewild Airport, and believe me, we tried to steal every bit of it.
You might know who we are, but we know who you are. You understand?
Yeah.
What kind of people are these? Life is
but a dream. What do you do?
I'm in construction.
If we wanted something, we just took it, and you didn't even think about it. To us, it was better than Citibank.
Nice.
Great, but nice.
You've got some nerve standing
setting me up. Nobody does that to me. Who the hell do you think you are? Frankie Valli or some kind of big shot?
I was living in a fantasy.
Look at my heart.
He's not Jewish.
Mazel tov.
For most of the guys, killing's got to be accepted. Murder was the only way that everybody stayed in line.
What are we gonna do with him? We can't just dump him on the street.
Don't worry, I know a place so safe, I'll never find him.
You got out of line, you got whacked. Everybody knew the rules.
Hey, Henry, here's an arm.
Very funny, guys.
Here's a leg.
There's a wing. What do you like, the leg or the wing, Henry?
Okay, you ready?
Sometimes I...
For us, to live any other way was nuts. Anything I wanted was a phone call away. And we were treated like movie stars with muscle. We had it all just for the asking.
It's gonna be a good summer.
It was a glorious time.
In a world that's powered by violence. On the streets where the violent have power. A new generation carries on an old tradition.
I've got to say, Dave, one of my favorite gangster movies ever. Henry Hill, Joe Pesci's an absolute bastard in this one. What a great pick, mate. And it would be on my list any day of the week. I've not watched this for about 5 or 6 years, but I love it every time I watch it. I've had it on DVD, everything over the years. So I'm so pleased you've picked something like this. Considering from one swing to another, nobody can ever say that we are consistent, Dave, because of me on this podcast. So it's not like we're in gangster season. We're going from a fucking washed up Navy SEAL Lauren Avedon to one of the greatest movies of all time. So I cannot wait, mate.
You know, I don't think I've seen this since I got it on video in the early 90s. And I never really got into the mob thing in a big way. So I think just how fucking brutal it is and just how quickly things can change. You know, again, I think I was just a bit of a fucking sensitive dweeb when I was younger. So, you know, just like the whole Joe Pesci scene, like, you know, you think I'm funny? Like, ha-ha, funny? You know, all that whole scene I just found so uncomfortable. And so I kind of appreciated it when I watched it without loving it. And so now, though, especially after I'm, you know, on the back of this Sopranos kick, I just think, I've got to go with this. Now, I've got to ask you, though, Chris. So I have watched everything, and this isn't really a spoiler because no one fucking knows. At the end of The Sopranos, Tony alive or dead?
I'd like to think alive, Dave, but the way it blacks out, I think it may have met his maker. But it leaves it completely open, obviously. Unfortunately, James Gandolfino died, didn't he? You know, but... I was always hoping there'd be a return. But, I think he probably did meet his maker at the end.
Yeah, I think he did. I don't think it was the guy who was sat at the bar because he's the number one suspect, wasn't he? He kind of looked like a bit of a hitman. But you wouldn't come into a restaurant and let everyone see your face, I don't think. So no. I don't think it's him, but... Because most of the series was around him, just that whole way it cuts, I just think, you're dead, mate. But I think they probably wanted it to be left open because ultimately, if HBO had come with, you know, a ridiculous financial offer, because it was the most successful thing they'd done at the time, wasn't it? Then you could write your way out of it quite easily. You know, so I think that's why they left it open. But unfortunately, as you said, James, he's passed on, you know, and I think this role, you know, just through, not through, you know, being a method actor or anything, but just the I was reading up the recording schedule and everything, the shooting schedule was ridiculously punishing. So I think that took its toll on him. And he passed away, what was it, 2013 or something? Actually, you know, nearly 20. Was it 2013 or was 13. It 2003?
No, 2013 in Italy, I think it was.
Yeah, so 10 years ago now. So, yeah, a massive shame, but yeah, fucking brilliant. So if, like me, you've just avoided it, you know, I can highly recommend go through that one. But yeah, there's a lot of the actors who pop up in Sopranos who were in Goodfellas as well. So I'm going to be looking out for some of these other sort of side characters.
I can't wait. I know the one who says, come and shine my shoes, he's definitely out of Sopranos. He's a bastard in the Sopranos as well. So with Joe Pesci, that's a fucking iconic bit, that Dave. Fucking brilliant.
Right. So, well, yeah. I know his girlfriend, Ray Liotta's girlfriend, that's the psychic. Oh, psychic. Psychiatrist.
Yeah.
Fucking psychic. Still thinking Deadly Ransom. See how I brought it back there, Chris.
You did well there, Dave. Yeah, very professional. So massive thank you to everyone, as always, guys. Your support is brilliant. We really appreciate it. If you want to email us, thevhsstrikesback@gmail.com. If you want to follow us on social media, @VHSStrikesBack. If you do want to support us a little bit more, get over to patreon.com/thevhsstrikesback. So today's roll call of honor, Mr. Tony Farina, John Hammond, Blake Maths, Jack Herb, Lucky Lulu Green, Kent Gustafson, Heath, Matt, Paul, Alec, Timothy, Susan, Justin, Dan, Trent, Stephen, and Dylan. So thank you so much for all your support, guys. It's so, so good. And it's just great, mate. I can't wait for next week's episode, if I'm being honest, because it gives me an excuse to throw Goodfellas on. So absolutely excellent. Yeah. Now, Dave, what are you going to take us out with today?
Well, Chris, I'm going to pick a quote from this movie, because it's the only one that someone's put down in IMDb. And it's a line by Max Leitner, and it is a classic tough guy line. And he says, "You had it all wrong. It was your turn to die." Genius. Right. Cheers for that, mate. Let's watch a good fucking movie for next week. Thanks to everyone out there for listening and supporting us, as Chris says. And we'll speak to you next time.
Bye.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over. What the fuck are we gonna do now?
What are we gonna do? Maybe we could build a fire, sing a couple of songs, huh? Why don't we try that?
We better get back, because it'll be dark soon, and they mostly come at night. Mostly.
I'll be back.
That's odd.
We came, we saw, we kicked its ass.
Wax on, wax off.
Ring the bell.
All right. Ding, ding.
Bust you up. Go for it.
Well, here we go.
Ain't so bad. Ain't so bad. Ain't so bad. Ain't so bad. Ain't so bad.
You must be crazy or something.
I'm crazy.
You just must be
crazy. Yeah, maybe you stupid.
Crazy.
They ain't breathing heavy.
He's a fool. He's stupid.
I've seen you in 6 months.
I must break you.